Good morning, Fort McMurray, with Buffalo and the rest of the world. You've tuned in to the Max City Morning Show. I am your host, Elliot Pierre. We're going to start today's episode off the same way we start every episode off, with a moment of gratitude. I know you could be doing a million other things with your time, and the fact that you spend it with us truly does mean the world to me, so thank you. On that note, Tanner, hit him with the intro.
How's it going, you guys? It's Jake White, JJW, coming at you from Norrell Toyota in Fort McMurray. Just wanted to say hi and come on down and check the place out.
Hi, my name's Richard. I'm the service manager here at Norrell Toyota.
Hi there, I'm Adam. I'm here at Norrell Toyota. I'm a product advisor.
Hi, I'm Cass. I'm the appointment coordinator. Happy to help you.
Hey, it's Keith Simpson here. I'm the general manager of Norrell Toyota, soon to be Fort McMurray Toyota. Pretty excited for our new dealership. As you've seen, you met all my staff. These guys are all my family. We're here to take care of you. Come on down and be part of our family.
And we are back. Big shout out to Norrell Toyota, our title sponsor for today's episode. We really do appreciate your ongoing support. As everybody at home knows, I do not introduce my guests because they can do a better job at that than myself. So, sir, can you please tell everybody at home who you are and what you're about?
I am Toe Tappa. My name's Adam. I make acoustic dance music. I play a little live instrumentation with my electronic music sets. That's all I got.
Yeah, that's it, man. It was wild to see you perform last night. So where did this combo of playing the guitar and putting like your music off of your turntables into one?
My first... Get back there.
Yeah. Fucking it up.
The first handful of songs that I made were just like strictly electronic, and then I had like I've been playing guitar since I was 7, so I had a lot of riffs that I'd kind of just accumulated in my head over the years, and I made 2 or 3 with the acoustic guitar in it, and it was like when I would make just a straight up EDM song, like a couple of my friends would dig it and whatever, but then I started putting the guitar in it, and like my 60-year-old dad was like, "This is pretty good." And so I started kind of reaching a little bit of a broader audience with just having the guitar in the songs.
Yeah.
And it just kind of was a no-brainer to do the live guitar with the performances. Like, I would play at little house parties and stuff, and people would hear the guitar in the songs. They would be saying, like, man, next time you play, you should actually bring the guitar with you. So kind of just happened naturally.
Interesting. So you said you've been playing guitar since you were 7.
Yeah.
Is that something like that a family member passed on? Did you just see it on TV and say, oh, I want to pick that up? Like, how did that start?
My mom is kind of a multi-instrumentationalist. So there was always like, there was a drum kit in the house and a piano and like several guitars just in the house all the time.
Okay.
So yeah, it was just a matter of, I heard like an AC/DC song one day and was like, I think I could probably play that. And then I just kind of picked it up from there.
That's cool. So what kind of music did your mom listen to?
She's into like a lot of like late 70s, early 80s kind of rock and pop and stuff. Bee Gees, The Police, that kind of thing. So, but she listens to lots of stuff too, so.
Was she listening to it on vinyl, on tape, on the radio? What do you remember, like how she would like hear that? How did she play that music?
We definitely didn't have vinyl in the house. Pretty big CD and tape collection, I would say. And then just like listening to different radio stations. I just remember being a kid and she knew all the words to like every song on every station. I was like, how the fuck do you know all this music?
Yeah.
So
she's just a lover for it. So then it just kind of infused into you.
Yeah.
So if you're playing guitar and now you're doing EDM, like what was the type of music like in your adolescence that you just gravitated to and said, this is my type of music?
My very first like band that I was obsessed with was AC/DC. So I heard Hell's Bells was the first song I ever learned. And then I bought like a tablature book that was like that thick.
Yeah.
And one summer off from school, I just sat and learned every single song in that book and then moved on to Metallica. And then after that, I kind of just started going all sorts of different directions.
Right.
And as far as EDM, Deadmau5 was kind of the one that kind of roped me in right off the bat and stuck with him forever and still probably my absolute favorite to this day.
That's cool. And so like when I teach a course to young students on how to like edit videos and whatnot, right?
Yeah.
And a big component Deadmau5 of that, what I tell them is like, it doesn't matter what camera you use, maybe a phone or an expensive one, just like know your equipment well and then you'll be fine.
Yeah.
And so you yesterday were playing with a different set of turntables than the other DJs, plus you're playing a guitar, plus you have this other thing going on for like, I don't know, fading or whatnot. Like you are all over the place. How do you know how to use all of those pieces of equipment?
I just practice at home all the time. Like if I know that I have a set coming up, as soon as I found out the date for this show and kind of roughly what sort of vibe we were shooting for, then I kind of pick out my set list and then I run through it. Like I probably practice that set like 50 plus times.
Really?
So just so that I know, like, okay, as soon as I'm finished this riff, I'm going to be at X point in the song. I got to hit play. I got to get ready to do this fade, this transition type of thing. So I just practice. I'm not like a DJ. Like, I'm not a DJ. I can't hop up there and do any of the shit that those other guys did last night. Like, I'm not, like, naturally like that.
Right.
Like, delete this. Yeah. Eric, I was talking to him, like, 5 minutes before his set was going to start. I'm like, what song do you think you're going to start with? He's like, I don't know.
Yeah,
and my head is just like, what? What do you mean you don't know? Like, I can't do that, but I can practice a performance and do it over and over again.
So. Well, I think that is like what I was seeing yesterday with all of you guys. You're all different, but you really did what you just said. You put on a performance. It was really cool because you had the turntables behind you.
Yeah.
Then you had like your guitar, so you were interacting with the fans, and then you had to like dodge, aka dance around the wires, while you were taking a drink every once in a while, and you were putting on like a performance, and I'm like, this is wild. And how you were like playing the guitar, and then all of a sudden it'd go to the music, and your riff would consistently be in the music afterwards.
Yeah.
And I was listening to, and we talked about it at in the parking lot afterwards. Yeah. You had planned that, so like I thought you were playing it, then hitting a button, and then having it just continue, but you had placed that prior too.
So what I do a lot of the time is when I start making a song, I'll just record the guitar riff first, and then I can kind of take that and turn it into a bunch of other parts of the track. Like I can take most of it and turn it into like something of a bass line, and then you can take the whole riff and pitch it up a couple octaves and put some effects on it, and then you get kind of a nice sparkly, more high frequency layer in it too. So like a lot of that riff will, you'll still hear notes of it and rhythms of it after I stop playing. So
it makes it
a pretty smooth transition.
Neat. So now with that equipment, like at what point did you decide, okay, I'm investing in gear? Like, was that your first turntable, or have you progressed from something different?
No, that's my very first turntable. I was taking production lessons for a couple of months from a producer, and I already had the interface and everything that I needed to like record and make the music.
Mm-hmm.
And then he had just recommended, like, if you're going to be running, because I'm running my effects chain for the guitar through Ableton, so I get my compression, reverb, so a little bit of delay and stuff like that. And then I also have like a live side chaining happening. Like I have like a light audio ducking happening, just so that it doesn't just sound like the guitar is laying on top of the track. It kind of bounces with the kick and everything like that.
100%.
So just to get those two to sync up, Ableton and Traktor sync up a lot easier and more seamlessly than like Serato or Rekordbox or anything like that. So he recommended the Traktor controller, and that's what I've been playing with ever since.
Neat. And so the one thing I love to see, and like you're talking about it now, is when we get all you DJs together, I love the collaboration, I love the talking.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what are you doing? How are you doing this? How do you end up meeting those people outside of just coming to a show where obviously you have like four or five?
Mm-hmm.
You obviously have like a mentor, somebody's coaching you through the equipment. Is that somebody that you're... Are those people you find in school, or you just meet online? Like, how does that all transpire? Well,
the mentor that I had for a couple of months there ended up being kind of a piece of shit guy.
He
was just a producer that I liked. Like, I was familiar with a handful of his songs.
Yeah.
And then I found out, like, this is like 5 years ago, I found out that he was going to Shambhala, and we started DMing on Instagram.
Yeah.
And I was just stoked to get a response from the guy, and then met him there and, you know, did a couple months with him.
Yeah.
But then Eric, delete this, he played an after party for Jaws in Edmonton, like... 2 years ago, and I thought his set was way better than Jaws, like at the end of the night. And
so
the next time I was at a show at that same venue, I was just like, ended up standing next to him in the crowd. I was like, hey, you're that delete this guy, aren't you? And he's like, yeah. And then we became really good friends that way.
Yeah.
Wolbear, just as soon as we both found out that we were on this lineup for last night's show, we just followed each other on Instagram and kind of started interacting that way. So,
So it really is being a part of the scene. You can't fake it. If you're not a part of the scene, then you don't get to be in the scene, basically.
Yeah.
Interesting. Because, like, you guys do have such a good camaraderie. It's almost like, and I knew you, some of you were meeting for the first time, but just the environment and the atmosphere just lent for you guys being like, oh, what are you doing? Coming in and chatting. It was, like, a really nice thing to see.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah. So, as far as, like, goals in music, like, what are you trying to achieve with what you're creating?
I honestly just want to be able to make, like, a decent living and be able to do it full-time. I took at the end of 2019, like, I had a really high-paying job at that time, and I was only 7 or 8 months into producing music. I was still really new at it, but I figured just, like, at the rate that I was going then, I had some savings set aside, and I thought, like, if I fully fly at this, I can make this happen. Like, I can turn this into a living. Even if I'm just scraping by and just paying my bills and just making it happen, I would be happy with that.
Yeah.
But of course, I did that at the end of 2019.
Right.
And I was telling it, I'm leaving my job, and I'm like, okay, well, so by March, April 2020, I'll be playing shows, I'll be coming back here to sell you guys tickets, whatever, and then March 2020 go. Yeah. Boom. Got locked in the house for a year.
Yeah.
So. Bent over.
Yeah. So yeah, man, I just want to be able to do it all the time and not have to do anything else. That's really all I'm shooting for right now. But I mean, to have a little bit extra money to throw around would be great, but yeah.
Very cool. Well, listen, Tanner tapped his phone. That means he's ready for his segment called the Max City Minute.
All right.
This segment is sponsored by Carrie. We're not going to cut to her ad right now. We'll be at the end of the episode because Pam is editing these. So big shout out to Carrie Patchouli Rose. Tanner.
And Pam.
Yeah, big shout out to Pam. Yeah. Tanner, hit him with the Max City Minute.
All right, question number one. What do you think is the best guitar solo in a song?
Oh, I was just thinking about this. honestly, Beat It by Michael Jackson has a fucking sweet guitar solo. Probably that one.
Question number two. What do you think is the best drop in an EDM song?
God damn it, that's a hard one. I really like that second drop in Black Ice by Rez and Subtronics. That tempo switch. Liking that one lately.
Question number three. What is your go-to way to celebrate a good set?
A couple beers. A little doobie.
Question number four. If you could collab with one artist, who would you choose to collab with?
Culprit. You familiar with Culprit?
And question number five. What was your favorite after school snack?
Pizza Pops.
Those have been your five questions.
What kind of pizza pops?
Probably pepperoni and bacon.
That's the way to go. Yeah. That's the way to go. I was more of a bowl of Ritz crackers and then cheese.
I was going to say something like charcuterie or kind of Lunchables type of thing, but back in the day it was, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one. Pizza Pops. That's a good one. My buddy, one night after the bar, was eating in bed a pizza pop and he fell asleep and woke up with it like stuck to his back. That's funny. So what do you do full time?
Like, I'm a CNC machine operator.
Yeah, you were saying that last night. So what, like, I have my brother-in-law and my father-in-law are both machinists.
Okay.
So they use that kind of machinery. Are you a machinist or just strictly the machine, the CNC?
It's just strictly the one that I run. Like, a lot of machinists are kind of making a lot more finely crafted things. What I do, like, CNC is just computer numerically controlled, so it's like you have to program the machine and then physically set it up. And I make purlins and girts, if you know what that is.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, so I make purlins and girts.
Okay, and how did you line that career up? How did you fall into that? Because that's not something like they're teaching you in high school and they say, hey, go get a job.
Yeah, so I used to sell Harley Davidsons for a living, and I sold this guy a motorcycle, and then we became friends after that. Mm-hmm. And then after I left that job and kind of fumbled through a few more random jobs in between, he had put a thing up on Instagram just saying, we're looking for industrial painters for X amount per hour. And I said, oh, fuck, well, I'll take that job. I didn't have any painting experience, but I went and did the industrial painting for a year. I fucking hated it. And I told my boss, like, my boss really liked me and he wanted to keep me around. He'd already given me a pretty decent raise.
Mm-hmm.
And I told him, like, look, man, I'm going to start applying for other jobs. And he just said, I'll pay you, you know, this much more to run this machine. And I was like, ah, fuck.
Yeah, no.
Took it, and I've been doing that for like 6 or 7 months now. Not too long, but
nice.
Yeah, it's all right.
Hey, listen, a job that puts money in your bank account is a job that puts money in your bank account.
It's true.
Life could be worse, right?
100%.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things. You never know. I remember I was probably 20 or 21. I don't exactly know the right age, but I was ready to go see the world. Mm-hmm. Like, I had just finished a job, and I had saved X amount of dollars, and I was literally at the passport office in Edmonton, and I had my brand new passport. It was Saturday, and on Sunday I was going to go to the airport to just be like, this is how much money I got, book me a plane ticket to wherever, out of Canada. That was the game plan. And I got a call from this guy, Ian Sheckley, and he was just like, hey man, what are you up to? And I told him my plan. He's like, I need you to come back on Monday to Fort McMurray. I want to talk to you about a job. And I was like, Ian, man, I'm about to go see the world. Like, nah. He's like, listen, like, 5 minutes Monday morning, just show up.
Yeah.
So I did, and he just had a contract on the table. When I showed up, he's like, that's how much I'll pay you to do this amount of work. Go do a drug test. And
I was like, I'm not going to pass a drug test.
Shit! And so, like, I went and I did it. I passed the drug test. Nice. Boom. And anyways, and it was the beginning of a great career. Mm-hmm. But, like, you never know. Sometimes when, like, an opportunity falls in your lap, even though you might not want it, you got to take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So with you played here last night, like, what are the kind of venues you're hoping to play in? Clubs, festivals, like
all of it?
For the longest
for the longest time it was Union Hall. I'm sure you've been to Union a handful of times.
You just booked it out.
No, Temple.
So yeah, Union was the go-to one in Edmonton, and that's where I like really aspired to play. Never got an opportunity to do that, and now it's kind of graduated to being more of a hip-hop venue anyway. But
yeah.
Temple Ballroom's the biggest one that I'm gunning for right now. And then once I feel like if I put on a good set or three or five at Temple Ballroom, then mm-hmm. that kind of bumps me up to maybe Shaw Conference Center type of shows. And yeah,
that's
Shambhala
cool.
eventually, that would be kind of the biggest one I'm shooting for at the moment.
Yeah, because with your show, like the more people can see what you're doing, like have the opportunity, like I think people would really be into it. Cause
I think so too, man.
It's very unique.
Well, yeah, like you came up to me as soon as I put my shit down and walked out from behind the booth. You came right up to me and you're like, "Do you do this for a living?" I was like,
yeah.
"Fuck, what a compliment!" But yeah. like, I how many people do you think were there peak during my set? Maybe like 20.
I don't know. Like I was
20, 30.
Yeah, 20, and I would say like 17 people came up to me and said something like really genuine and nice afterwards. So like the approval rating out of that small crowd, I felt was like. Really, really good. Like I was blown away by how many people liked it there. So you scale that up to 500 people.
Yeah.
And I think like it won't take long before I can kind of start bumping my venues.
That's
up.
Right.
Yeah.
Are you going to Frenzy Fest?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Yeah, you should think about that. That'd be a venue to really show like what you do off.
I definitely want to play there. Yeah. I think I'll start kind of maybe gunning for that a little harder next year.
Yeah. Because even like we have a Renegade stage, just like people seeing what you're doing.
You guys have a Renegade stage?
We're going to do a stage there, yeah.
When is Frenzy Fest?
Oh, look at that opinion change real quick.
Well, I wasn't planning for it, but I don't know if you guys want me to play
it's
there.
It's the second weekend in August.
I'll probably play that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Think about it, man.
I love that.
Because it's a smaller venue, there's about like 800 people there. And like for what you do, just to get people to see you,
yeah.
like it's just about getting out there. One, like you do put on a performance. So if people saw you, like potentially in a club where they're not able to like necessarily see because you're on that stage,
mm-hmm.
might be a little bit challenging like to get that off the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're at a lower like vantage point and people can see the moving, the playing, the back and forth,
mm-hmm.
yeah, man, it's just a matter of like, for you with your performance, it's literally just a matter of people seeing you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like I was like, when I was, there's one track you played, I was lost and I was dancing. And then when I came off, like some girl in the back was like, "Man, you're really feeling that." I was like, I was really feeling that shit. Like I got lost in that song for a second.
Fuck yeah.
Like it was sweet, man. Like you have something like the performance of moving, like you lucked out with the DJ table or not the tape, the
thing being behind me.
Behind you, man.
Yeah.
You totally lucked out. And like, good for you for not tripping over anything. Like, I was like the whole time, like, this is a precarious situation.
Yeah. Could have gone so wrong. Could have twisted my foot up, pulled everything off the table.
Totally.
Yeah,
totally. And then how you were passing your beers to her, I was just like, aw. It was such like, it was part of the show, how you were incorporated into it. Like, it was such a, like, it was a whole thing. Like, I loved it, man.
Good,
I thought
man,
you
yeah.
were fantastic.
Thank you. Yeah.
I experienced more than it was a set.
That's right.
Thank you guys, I appreciate it. Yeah, dude, honestly, because you were pretty much front, you were right at the front of the crowd the whole time, and like I kept looking over at you and just
boom,
down. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, you're slaughtering it. I've never seen anything like it before. I posted a video yesterday of you on Facebook.
Yeah.
I just shared in a bunch of groups here. It already has like 2,000 views.
Oh my God.
Like, people were like into what you were throwing down. It's just one of those things when we throw these shows, like, Fort Mac's a late night town to begin with.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So like nobody's showing up prior to like 11:30.
Yeah.
That's when the crowd will like really start to bolster out.
Yeah.
So it is a shame that like more people weren't there for your set. Cause like you are, I think, what people in Fort McMurray would really gravitate to.
Mm-hmm.
Cause like we're that country kind of thing.
Yeah.
He's looking at me almost. We good? Oh, well, that means we're out of time.
Yeah.
So before I cut you loose though, everybody gets a shameless shout out or plug. So
yep.
You have the mic, the camera, the lights. Have fun.
All right, we're Toe Tappa Music on Instagram. That's pretty much where I keep up to date with everything. Toe Tappa on all the Spotify, Apple Music, SoundCloud, all that stuff. Just Toe Tappa, TOETAPPA.
There we go. Awesome. Well, Fort McMurray with Buffalo, the rest of the world. That's been another episode of the Max City Morning Show. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for tuning in. Big shout out to our title sponsor, Naral Toyota, as well as Carrie from Patchouli Rose and the beautiful people at Coldwell Banker. We really do appreciate your ongoing support. Hope everybody at home is having a great day, and we'll see you tomorrow. Peace.
Hi everyone, it's Carrie with Patchouli Rose here at Thickwood Barbershop. If you're wondering what to get your loved one this season for Valentine's Day, I make an all-natural anti-aging skin serum called Good Skin. It's good for men and women, and it's available for purchase here at the barbershop, downtown at the corridor shops and events, and on my website. Thank you for your support.
talk about quenching your ugly thirst.